Good afternoon, and welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Scott Greeson, director of Friends of the Eel River. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, the Eco News. And don't forget, you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. So we're going to do things a little differently than we usually do today. In the studio with me today is Alicia Heyman. Alicia's my co-conspirator at Friends of the Eel River. Hey, Alicia.
Hi, Scott.
But we are going to sort of wrap the show around some audio I recorded out in the field this past weekend with a guy named Mickey Bailey at the mouth of Woodman Creek on the main stem of the Eel River. And I want to set the scene a little bit for what was happening there at Woodman Creek before we go to that audio and talk about the specific sort of details of that place and that event. To start with, Woodman Creek is a big tributary of the main stem eel. The mouth, the confluence of the main stem eel, is about 20 miles north, which is to say downstream of Dos Rios, where the middle fork and the main stem of the eel come together. Caltrout's been working for the last couple of decades with the North Coast Railroad Authority, which took over the then defunct private railroad, basically to figure out how to get these streams open back up. Now, Caltrout basically came in and said to the railroad, we'll fix this problem for you. We'll get some grant money and we'll open up these creeks and put fish back in. You know, we'll solve your problem for you. Even though it's your fault and your liability, we'll go ahead and fix this. So Caltrout has gone to the local landowners and is working with them and the railroad to remove these obstructions. So it turns out that the guy who owns the land at the mouth of Woodman Creek is the brother of somebody I've known for 25, 30 years in the conservation movement. He's actually one of the people who sort of introduced me to the movement. And this fellow, whose name is Mickey Bailey, the guy who owns the place at Woodman Creek, made friends with his brother's dear friend, a guy named Tim Lillibeau, who was one of the guys who sort of taught me the business of being a conservationist when I was just out of college in Oregon. Now, Tim was a remarkable man who knew a tremendous amount about the mountains and rivers and habitat of eastern Oregon. But the thing that defined Tim more than anything was that he was pretty much everybody's friend. He was an incredibly nice guy who just was impossible to dislike in person, which is a great attribute for a conservationist, because often our job is saying things people don't like. And if you can do that in a way that people like, that's a pretty good thing. So anyway, alas and alack, Tim, who worked for many, many years as the East Side representative for what started out as the Oregon Wilderness Coalition, became the Oregon Natural Resources Council, and then ultimately became Oregon Wild today, died of a heart attack a few years ago while shoveling out his driveway in Bend. So Mickey Bailey, who's doing this project to restore fish to Woodman Creek and to the eel, decided to dedicate this project to the memory of Tim Lillibeau and to the Round Valley tribes and to the river itself. So I showed up at Mickey Bailey's property to just join in this dedication and observe it, and found myself saying hi to Rick Bailey for the first time in quite a long time, a dear friend, and having this remarkable sort of personal connection to the energy that was being brought to this place because of my long friendship with Tim. And it was just a really remarkable event. So to get a sense of what was happening there, we put up some pictures on the Friends of the Eel River webpage, and you can get to those through the KHSU website, khsu.org. So for the dedication, Mickey Bailey asked Ron Lincoln to come over from the Round Valley tribes, and Ron sang a prayer. And we also had a fellow named Buzz, who has this fantastic, very large salmon sculpture that he's created out of a big hunk of madrone. So these details are relevant because in the clips you're going to hear following, you hear people talking in the background, basically sort of finishing up this dedication ceremony, talking about the plants around us. But you also hear a bunch of tapping. It might sound like hammering. That's actually people using chisels and a mallet carving away on this salmon sculpture, because Buzz's idea is he carves a little of it every time he does something like this. So the experience is kind of getting built into the salmon sculpture, and it keeps moving around to different places. And I'm just reminded, being there in that place, of the threads that tie this ceremony to so many other events I've been to like this, where people are bringing together ideas about belonging to a place, about listening to native traditions, about art, about song, about spirit, and our connection to the river and the place. So all this comes together because as we sit recording this show in the studio on Tuesday, Alicia and I are getting ready to go to San Francisco to attend the California Supreme Court's hearing in Friends of the Eel's long-running court challenge to the North Coast Railroad Authority's refusal to follow California environmental law. And basically, what we're concerned about is exactly the kind of thing I'm standing on that ridge with Mickey Bailey looking at. So let's cut to the tape with Mickey and talk about Woodman Creek a little bit. So we're standing on a little ridge just south of the mouth of Woodman Creek. We can see the bridge and where the mouth of the creek used to be. Why don't you talk a little bit about just what this place means to you as somebody who lives here, and you know, what's happening here?
The river is beautiful here and unspoiled. And Woodman Creek was altered over the last 100 years and has blocked the salmon and steelhead from coming up this very pristine creek.
We've got, 14 miles of nice habitat up above the mouth here?
Woodman Creek watershed is 25 square miles, and it's 80% forested and hasn't been logged in a long, long time. The cannabis growers have come in and bought up these little pots, and they don't take down many trees. They do take some down, but not many. Now, the main thing about this artery is that the salmon and steelhead can't get up here to spawn anymore because the railroad blocked the mouth of the creek and moved it to a spot where it's too steep for the salmon and steelhead to get up.
So there we were talking about how the construction of the railroad actually blocked off Woodman Creek and how this particular project is going to restore salmon and steelhead access to Woodman Creek.
So
what's the plan here, Mickey?
Well, the plan here is that this trestle was solid rock, and they dynamited this little hole and shortened the creek so that they could make this short bridge instead of a long bridge.
Right.
They're going to take out 220 feet of railroad track with the blessings of the railroad company, and they're going to put the creek back to where it was originally.
But there's a bigger problem of the railroad's impact on the river.
So how does this relate to our lawsuit?
Well, in a couple of ways that I can see. One, as Mickey and I talk about, the problem we're trying to address in the lawsuit is this question of, if you're going to rebuild the railroad, how are you going to do it in a way that doesn't guarantee another century of impacts on the fisheries? But there's also a little bit of a weird problem around the Woodman Creek crossing itself, because when Caltrout went to the North Coast Railroad Authority, the state agency that now runs this rail line we all own as citizens of the state of California, and said, we want to get public money to fix this fish habitat, to reopen the fish habitat, the NCRA, the Railroad Authority, actually said, well, what are you going to do for us? And basically demanded not just that Caltrout fix the fish access, but that it actually figure out a way to put the bridge back so that they could keep using the railroad.
Yeah.
So another thing we can see sort of from the long perspective up on this ridge is the railroad tracks going out in the distance. And, you know, they're covered in a lot of places by landslides. To me, this is just an easy illustration of how difficult it's always been to keep a railroad running in this landscape. You know, there are the tracks are laid at the bottom of landslides and keep getting covered.
Well, we went for a hike 2 days ago to the south, and we've found two more brand new landslides that have dumped down onto the tracks. Just this winter.
Just from this winter.
Just this winter, yeah. And there's many of them. I know people in Dos Rios, and I go down Highway 162, and there's many landslides. And these,
I think we'd counted a couple hundred at one point.
It's just amazing.
A few years ago.
They just keep coming.
Yeah.
And when I was down here with some politicians and the railroad engineers, one of the old timers was a mechanic like me, and I was talking to him a lot. And we were talking about what it took to get a railroad. I mean, they had railroad cars full of redwood. It was very heavy. It was fresh lumber. And they had to
valuable too.
Yeah. They had to come down here every day in front of the railroad train to try and make it, to make sure the train could make it. This is the most expensive line in the United States to maintain for them to have the ability to get down. Now, when they were coming through here, you know what they were doing. They were scraping off whatever landslide had happened the day before and dump it in the river.
Right.
And that's just damaging the river. And this is how this was done before they stopped running this railroad in 1994. So I don't know why they stopped running it. Was it too expensive? Was it that the environmental laws stopped them? I don't know.
Federal Railroad Administration actually told them they had to shut down because it was hazardous at that point. But yeah.
You know better than I. You're in the midst of the lawsuit.
You're describing the reality that you see on the ground here. And the group I work for, Friends of the Eel, is actually suing the railroad to try to get them to look at what it would take to rebuild this stretch from Willits up to Eureka in a way that wouldn't wind up constantly dumping stuff into the creek, into the river. And, you know, our big concern is that they would rebuild it on the cheap because, hey, there's not much money to go around. And if you rebuild it on the cheap, your plan is basically to spend the next 100 years bulldozing the landslides into the river.
And that's right.
That to us seems like a very bad plan for recovering Yellow River salmon. That's why we're worried about it.
Of course. And that should not continue. There's got to be alternatives. And they need to look at alternatives. The Eel River, in spite of the two dams up here, is such a pristine place.
Now, so this goes directly to a key question in our lawsuit, which is, the NCRA says, on the one hand, we don't have to study the impacts on the Eel River because we're not actually going to develop there. But on the other hand, they say, well, we need to rebuild that rail line immediately, so you got to put your bridge back in. And, you know, they keep doing these things where they're saying things that are really quite contradictory.
Makes you wonder what their real intentions are.
It does, yeah. And if you're just tuning in, this is the Eco News Report. I'm Scott Greeson in the studio with Alicia Heyman, both from Friends of the Eel River. And the audio you've been hearing is clips from an interview I did with a guy named Mickey Bailey last weekend at the mouth of Woodman Creek. So here we are in the spring of 2017, and as we sit in the KHSU studio Tuesday morning, we're anticipating a hearing Wednesday before the California Supreme Court of this lawsuit we filed 6-7 years ago now. But for you listeners, that's your past. This is airing on Thursday, and we will have just had the hearing the day before. So this is a high-stakes, big-deal case.
So let's talk about the case. What's it about?
Well, there are really two different levels to it. When we started it, it was basically a challenge under CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, and we basically said, hey, railroad, you've looked at the impacts of reopening a third of the line, but you've always described this as one big line, and your economic studies say you need to run the whole thing together. How do you justify spending a bunch of taxpayer money and just looking at one chunk of it? Our take is you need to look at the impacts of the whole line together, and we're especially concerned, as we heard in that clip, about the impacts on the main stem eel of just rebuilding the rail line the way we did a century ago and operating it the same way. But there's another level to it now, because when we started to win that case, the North Coast Railroad Authority actually said, forget it. We don't have to comply with CEQA at all. And they withdrew the environmental impact report we paid to create. That's a $3 million document. And said basically, Federal Railroad law means we don't have to comply with CEQA at all, period. They claimed something called federal preemption. And they actually won at the district court and at the Court of Appeals. But on the day that our Court of Appeals hearing was happening, a different California Court of Appeals reached the opposite conclusion in a case brought by the city of Atherton challenging California's high-speed rail construction. And that Court of Appeals said, look, you can use CEQA to figure out impacts without running afoul of federal preemption here. There's ways to make these things work together to protect California's environment and figure out how to plan these things so they make sense. And you can do that, the court said, partly because California owns this rail line. It's California's thing. And the government, the federal government, doesn't control what California does as an owner in the same way that it controls what California does as a regulator. And so that's part of the question that we're bringing before the California Supreme Court now.
So the railroad poses a long-term risk to the river. What other kinds of threats are there?
Well, the big ones that we've been focused on for quite a while, and I think Mickey may have mentioned it earlier in our recording here, but we talk about it in the part that we're about to hear a lot, is the two dams on the upper main stem Eel. They're the Cape Horn Dam and the Scott Dam. And those two dams were built in the early years of the 20th century and are now, this spring, up for relicensing, which means we finally have this once-in-a-generation chance to consider whether we want those dams to remain in place on the river for another 50 years.
We put in these dams, and then we go on for 50 years, and then someone starts asking questions about what is the effect of what we've done. Well, the negative effects have already happened.
Right.
And how do you ask that question? Someone should have been observing before the dams were built to see how they would be affected.
Well, now we've got a chance, though, to look at that, because just this spring, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission started the relicensing process for those two dams. And
yes.
Friends of the Eel River and Caltrout are going to be part of that process, basically pushing for dam removal. We want to see those dams come out in order to get fish back into, you know, the tenth of the watershed that's up
above. Give me a D9 cat and a bunch of diesel. I'll get rid of them mothers in no time.
I would expect nothing
screw
less
this,
from a bailing.
Screw this bull.
Remember, I'm trying to get you on the radio.
Yeah.
So give me a D9 and a bunch of dynamite. Yeah.
You know, come on, man. I know how to get rid of those dams, and it's just a little patience and some hard work and the right equipment.
So the problem isn't the physical work of removing that structure. It's getting people to agree that that's the right thing to do at this point.
And our take at Friends of the Eel River is that the public interest would be much better served by removing those dams and opening up the tenth of the watershed that's blocked off by the Scott Dam entirely to fish access. That looks like some of the best habitat on the river. It's also in public hands in the Mendocino National Forest. So it offers, in our view, a great opportunity to turn things around for the eel.
So we call this the relicensing process. Does that mean the dams are being relicensed?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question because in practical terms, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, which is the agency that's in charge of hydroelectric dam licensing, really does kind of look at this as essentially a big rubber stamp. They are not really in the business of telling dam owners to take their stuff down and put the river back. In fact, it's quite unusual, maybe even unheard of, for FERC to say to a dam owner, you have to take your dam out, unless the dam owner has already kind of agreed that they want to. So that's the situation we're in right now with the Klamath dams, which listeners are probably a lot more familiar with. There's an agreement in place to remove those dams, but the FERC relicensing process is technically actually continuing. And what's in motion now is finishing up that process and getting FERC to say, okay, go ahead and decommission those dams and remove the physical structures. So I guess the short answer is we see that we can get to an agreement to take the dams out through this process, But it's really, really important to understand that the process is really stacked against us. It's built around the idea that dams should be there and should be relicensed. And there are a lot of ways in which FERC doesn't even really want to look at some of the really big questions that face us in considering whether we want to have those dams there. Like, for example, dam safety. Now, we've all been following the events at Lake Oroville pretty closely, but, you know, because it's kind of scary to see, you know, the tallest dam in California on the verge of falling down. But I think a lot of people were surprised to hear that the documents that explain why that happened and what it's going to take to rebuild Oroville aren't actually available to the public. You know, we face a similar situation on the Eel River dams, but we also face a situation where FERC is basically saying we don't want to consider dam safety as an issue in relicensing. So, you know, this is an important opportunity, but the opportunity starts by understanding what's there, you know, sort of being handed to us, and then what we're going to have to demand, you know, that goes beyond what the system wants to provide. And just a reminder, this is the Eco News Report with Scott Greeson, your host this week from Friends of the Eel River, talking in the studio here with my co-conspirator Alicia Heyman, also with Friends of the Eel River, about our lawsuit challenging the North Coast Railroad Authority's refusal to follow CEQA in rebuilding its rail line, and also about dam removal. So we've been talking so far mostly about these big long-term threats to the watershed from massive industrial developments, the railroad and the dams. But as everybody who's been paying attention to the Eel River and salmon knows, there are also some immediate short-term problems we've got to work out that have a lot to do not with big industrial development, but with widespread development for the pot industry. And Mickey Bailey here expresses, I think, a set of hopes about how that can go and fears about how it might go that I think reflect broadly the concerns I hear from people across the region. And I think it's worth hearing him out. But then he closes with a call that I think is really very compelling for people to work together. He says that's the answer, if there is one, is for people to work together.
This takes me back to what you said at the beginning of your talk here about how, in the big picture, we're learning to belong to this place and to recognize the mistakes we've made and to begin
the other way around.
To begin to live in this place in a way that's maybe sustainable. Maybe say that again.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to Ron from the Round Valley Tribes, and you know, I walked out here with him for the first time, and the first thing he does is grab a bush and says, "This is our tea," and he rubs it together in his hands, sticks it under my nose, and it's this beautiful smelling stuff. I know nothing about this place. I don't know about the food. I know all those pine trees, those light-colored pine trees over there, they make these huge cones.
Yeah.
And they make these huge cones. And if you catch those suckers when they first drop, there's tons of food.
Full
the
of pine nuts. Yeah.
You know, there's all this food here, and I have so much to learn. And the beginning of that learning is to embrace our native brothers and to learn from them so that we have the ability and the opportunity to live here in a way that will sustain all of us. Us Europeans, we have to learn the native ways if we're going to be here and share this place and learn how to manage it properly.
So, Mickey, you said something earlier that I think bears repeating. You expressed concern that the coming era of regulation we all see coming, and I think we're kind of on different sides of this argument actually, could really be a bad thing for the health of the watershed in your view, because if, as I think you put it, the regulations wind up driving cannabis growers out, nobody will be here who can afford to take care of the place.
And correct.
What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that
What's
is...
What's it take to take care of it?
The mountains are full of people that live on these long logging roads that are poorly maintained because the growers that are out here to try and make a buck. Now, if we regulate people and we maintain our roads properly, those well-maintained roads are going to not damage the fisheries and the rivers. And so one of the assets of regulation is that we're going to have the opportunity to bring in these growers that are out here cutting whatever trees they want, cutting whatever roads they want. We're going to have experts.
Recreational bulldozing. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. And I mean, I've seen pictures of what they've done in Humboldt. They're mowing down acres of land and throwing in these cannabis grows. And it's just like what you see down in Sonoma and in partial in southern Mendocino, where people come and they shave the sides of hills and they plant wineries. This is not what we need from cannabis. It's not required. Cannabis can become well regulated. It can help to keep the economy strong of the entire North Coast. The Emerald Triangle is world famous. We can grow the best cannabis and we can be a positive thing for this entire area, for the North Coast, for the Emerald Triangle. We can create something positive that makes our rivers stronger, makes the fisheries stronger, and keeps our economy strong up here.
I think you speak for a lot of people when you say that. Mythical version of President Trump called you up on the phone and said, "You get one wish, buddy. If there was one thing you could wave a magic wand and get everybody to do, what would that be that you think would help move things in the right direction here?"
Work together.
There you go.
Just work together. That was my main point in my talk here, that the native tribes, the cannabis growers, the cowboys, the rednecks, the hippies, we all need to work. If we work together, if we all sat down with representatives in a circle and sat down and started expressing the things that we desire, we would be not far off. We all live in this beautiful place for a reason.
Wrapping this up, we need to remind folks that as you're hearing this show, we have already been through the hearing for the Supreme Court's consideration of this case over the railroad. We hope for a successful outcome. We don't know. But for folks who are interested in the dam relicensing process, it's important to note that there's going to be a series of public scoping meetings happening in the region in July. You can go to eelriver.org and we'll have notices up there.
To stay up to date on the dam relicensing process or our Supreme Court case, you can sign up for our newsletter at bit.ly/FOER news. That's bit.ly/FOER news.
So this has been the Eco News Report. My name's Scott Greeson. I've been your host for the past half hour here in the KHSU studio with Alicia Heyman, also from Friends of the Eel River. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again on the archive programs page of the station's website at khsu.org. The Eco News Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for his invaluable engineering. Tune in again next week at the same time for the Eco News Report.